Time now to see what headlines are firing up our bloggers. Is being black a commodity these days? Plus, the state of the black union and more on black women and their hair. Our bloggers are here to weigh in. With us, media consultant Carmen Dixon. She writes the blog All About Race and also blogs for AOL Black Voices. And political analyst Lenny McAllister. He blogs for several sites, including Hip Hop Republican, The Root, and AOL Black Voices. And we may or may not be joined later on by Felicia Harvey, editor of Black Politics on the Web. If she comes on, we will let her join the conversation. Now, welcome to both of you.
Hello.
Hello. Hello, Carmen. My wonderful friend. How are you doing, Carmen?
Well, he was saying welcome to you. I guess you're his wonderful friend, Carmen.
You're yes, I am, hello. But I they can't hear him.
Oh, you can't hear him?
No.
Turn your headphone up there. There you go. Can you hear now?
I'll say
I can
hello.
Hear
okay, now she
hi
can hear.
Hi again. Hi, Lenny.
Okay.
Hey, Carmen. Hey, everybody.
Listen, let's talk about this. Leading up to the presidential election and in the month since the inauguration, there's been a lot of focus in the media on blackness, some of it good, some of it not so good. Here's the bad. The Southern Poverty Law Center reports the number of hate groups, has increased by over 50% since 2000. California mayor criticized for sending an email showing watermelons in front of the White House. He resigned. Last month, a firestorm erupted over an offensive cartoon in the New York Post that many say equated a chimpanzee with the president of the United States. That's the bad. Here's some of the good. CNN aired a two-part special called Black in America. CNBC has a special report on the new black overclass. Carmen, is black back? Are we the new flavor, so to speak?
Well, I think it's interesting. I don't know if we're a new flavor, but I think that race and blackness and alternatively whiteness is getting more attention because of who Barack Obama is, a self-identified black man who's now our president. It's interesting that someone like me who talks about race all the time and until this Barack Obama's ascendancy sometimes felt like she was spitting in the wind, race and racism and the complexity of race in America, it never goes away. Sometimes we focus on it, sometimes we don't. But again, what I think all of this is doing is showing how our national discussion and our national priorities and our national views of how to grow our country are influenced in subtle and overt ways about how we think about race.
Well, you could say, couldn't you, Lenny, that the volume on race has been turned up in terms of the discussion. We just heard from our digital producer, Jeffrey Bennett, talking about how people are interpreting little things like "Nah, I'm straight," and the interpretation of that.
Well, I would agree. I mean, part of it is this. The dichotomy within black America is so great now. You have the president of the United States, and you still have much of black America, in particular young black male youths, at a crisis situation. So you have one black male that's the president of the United States, the most powerful man and the leader of the free world. And then you have what Cornel West implied was you have one black man that's broken through and pierced the glass ceiling to get to the very, very top, but yet you still have to pay attention to people that are still stuck in the basement. And it's evident to everybody that there's this huge dichotomy that's there. And that was one of the challenges that we had over the course of the weekend to talk about is how do we get the rest of those folks at least up to fair ground so that they can have an opportunity. There was a lot of conversations over the weekend about how many more Barack Obamas are there out there that may not become the president of the United States but may accomplish things if we allow them to have a chance to accomplish and achieve. One thing that we forget about President Obama is this is not somebody that was successful from day one. He admittedly had fallen off the path. He admittedly was not the most adept or prepared or dedicated student. He overcame all that to become who he is now. How many more are like that we need to go get now? And it was very, you know, present at the conversation this Saturday, but it's out there in the widespread stream media as well nowadays.
Now, one of the things that Lenny's referring to, obviously, is the 10th annual State of the Black Union, which took place in Los Angeles over the weekend. The event is produced and hosted by Tavis Smiley, who brings together some of the best African-American thinkers and innovators to talk about the very issues that Lenny was referring to. Carmen, you were one of five official bloggers at the symposium. What were some of your observations of the event?
Well, my observations, I wrote about it a little bit in Black Voices and on my site All About Race, and my observations were that it was a conversation that we have every day, that black folks have intra-racially every day, that is now exposed to the wider audience, which is a great thing because I do think that particularly racists sometimes promote the idea that blacks have a groupthink, that we all think the same way, that we all are the same way. And I think one of the most important things about presenting a conversation on State of the Black Union, like conversation on State of the Black Union, have it broadcast by C-SPAN, is to show the diversity of thought within the black community and the diversity of ideas about how we fix the problems facing black and poor and urban people and people cut off from the main swim, so to speak, of pursuing the American
dream.
Well,
do you think, though, that that diversity of thought is being accepted or understood or received by the larger American community?
I think it's going to have to be, because I think those of us who are step outside of the stereotypes, we're talking louder. We're talking louder through new media. We're talking louder through radio shows like this one and radio shows we create. We're showing up more on in conversations, in national conversations, on TV, people like Lenny, people like Kevin Ross. Their voices step outside of the stereotypical, and this is not to denigrate them, but the Al Sharpton and the Reverend Jesse Jackson voices that that particularly whites and white racists like to lump all black thought into those particularly thought categories.
Well, let's talk about one, really briefly, one black voice that is, I don't want to say out of the mainstream, but I think it would be fair to say out of the mainstream of black America. That's Michael Steele, mm-hmm. the RNC chairman who got into this brouhaha with Rush Limbaugh. Lenny, what's your take on both what Steele said and Steele's subsequent apology?
Well, what Steele said symbolizes the culture war within the Republican Party that needs to transpire. You have the old guard that is moving further and further away from what America looks like, feels like, and acts like in the 21st century. And you have Michael Steele, who is the representation of where the Republican Party may need to start moving towards, somebody that's media savvy, that is familiar with the urban environments, that's not afraid to go into different environments where he's not viewed well and still feel comfortable in his skin. Unfortunately, I see what he did as far as the apology as being more of somebody caving in to pressure to raise money, to lose the little backing that the RNC has right now. And it's something that he probably politically needed to do, although I would, after meeting the man, would have to say ethically and morally he did not want to do. I agree with his statements. Rush Limbaugh is a hybrid of a politico and an entertainer. This is a man that makes millions and millions and millions of dollars every year to rile up the base from a microphone 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. That is his job. So whether people get elected or not, it doesn't necessarily affect him as long as he keeps that contract. Michael Steele, on the other hand, is on the hook to make sure that congressmen get elected in 2010. We start flipping the seats as far as from a Republican point of view in the Senate and the House of Representatives, as well as these state capitals in 2010. Rush Limbaugh's not on the hook for that. All Rush needs to do is get in front of a microphone and rail, especially now that he has a Democratic administration in there. If you look at his ratings, the best days for him was when President Clinton was in the White House. Glory days are here again for Rush Limbaugh. So you're seeing that there's a contrast between somebody that's in the media and somebody that's in politics, and you'll see the culture war within the Republican Party brew and bubble as a result.
You know, you're absolutely right. Go ahead, Carmen.
I want to talk a little bit about Michael Steele from a more racially framed perspective for me. I had the great good fortune to talk to Michael Steele at the State of the Black Union, and we had a great talk, and I shared with him very openly that he has an ally in me and someone who wishes to see the GOP attract more black, Latino, all sorts of people of color, because I believe the strength of our democracy rests in two strong, vibrant parties. And I also believe the Democratic Party takes the black vote for granted. Now, when I heard his apology and read his apology on Politico, it broke my heart, frankly. I was very saddened by it.
Tell me why.
And because when I met him and when I see him, I do perceive him as a strong black man. And whether his views agree with mine, that's not what it's about. He's a strong black man. He is talking about issues, inclusive issues that affect all of America, including black America. And I think the GOP needs that. I understand the dollars and cents of why he apologized to Rush Limbaugh. But it felt like an over-apology to me. It felt like groveling, to be frank, and to see, it brought back for me, because I do believe Rush Limbaugh is a bigot, and I can back that up with many things I've heard him say. I believe Rush Limbaugh is a bigot. So to see this man to feel he has to apologize in such a way that I feel was emasculating to this bigot broke my heart. If Joe Scarborough is taking on Michael Steele for the way he apologized, it's pretty remarkable, frankly.
Well, I tell you what, Rush Limbaugh, whether you think he is a bigot or not, one thing you cannot argue about him, he is a professional.
Yes.
In terms of being on the air.
Yes.
Michael Steele is not.
Right.
And when you put an amateur up against a professional, that's what's going to happen.
But Tony, I disagree with that a little bit. I mean, the bottom line is Michael Steele is a polished and seasoned politician. He's
not
an attorney. This is somebody that should know how to wordsmith and should know how to not step in it.
It is not the same thing. Trust me on that. It is not. He is a politician. You're absolutely correct. But when it comes to being an entertainer slash pundit slash whatever you'd like to describe Rush Limbaugh as, he's been at it a lot longer than Michael Steele, and he's he's really professional at it. Unfortunately, our time has run out. We didn't even get to talk about the hair. You know, that's the thing. People get mad at us because they say, well, why are you talking about things that are not important? And yet when we get responses, the response that we got to our segment on hair was far exceeded many of the other kinds of responses that we've gotten on other topics. So we will revisit that really quickly, Carmen. I give you 10 seconds.
I just wanted to say, because particularly with black women, our hair has a lot to do with our identity and our self-esteem.
All right. That was Carmen Dixon, who writes the blog All About Race. She also blogs for AOL Black Voices. And we were joined by Lenny McAllister. He blogs for several sites, including Hip Hop Republican, The Root, and AOL Black Voices. You can find links to their blog as well as to ours at nprnewsandnotes.org.